Mr. Tom Bias, CEO of Growth Energy. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thank all of you for taking time to get on this call today. We are Growth Energy, America's ethanol supporters. We have 61 ethanol-producing plant members and about 17,000 growth force members, supporters of ethanol. Today, what we want to talk about is on everyone's mind on Capitol Hill here recently, and that's the Senate debate on energy policy. We feel it's very important that this debate address one of the biggest challenges our nation has confronted over the past 40 years, and that's our addiction to foreign oil that doesn't get less but continues to grow. I want to commend some of the champions of biofuels who are out there trying to do what's right in extending the tax credits to move this industry forward. Senators Grassley and Conrad and Congressman Pomeroy and Shimkus fully support their efforts to capture and renew those tax credits. Time and again, our dependence on foreign oil has severely impacted our economy, our taxpayers, our environment, and our national security. We spend approximately $300 billion a year as a nation, $1 billion a day on foreign oil. America's economic resources are helping the economies of foreign and sometimes hostile countries. This is absurd, both from an economic and national security standpoint. It's time we actually do something about it. Our addiction to foreign oil equals roughly two-thirds of our trade deficit, money that should be kept here in our economy, creating and maintaining jobs in America. And we need a vision. We need a plan to reverse this dangerous trend. Ethanol is the only existing alternative to foreign oil that can be produced in any sizable quantity. It's not a fuel that's 20 years away. It's here, it's now, and it can help our nation reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We're currently approximately 10% of our nation's gasoline supply. However, we can do more if the proper steps are taken by Congress, so we can have an access to a free, open marketplace. What we are proposing today is a plan to help achieve this goal. The Fueling Freedom Plan calls for shifting government programs to reduce the barriers we face in competing openly and fairly in a free market. Almost every visit that I make and others make on Capitol Hill for a number of years is, how long are we going to have to rely on government subsidies? What do we need to do to move forward? Well, we no longer have a problem in producing ethanol. In fact, we are overproducing more than the government regulations will allow us to use. Our challenge is the infrastructure barriers that prevent us from competing in an open marketplace. Oil has a 90% monopoly. We need to break the monopoly. Our plan calls for the redirection and eventual phasing out of government supports. Mandatory flex fuel vehicle production and tax incentives for retail fueling stations to install blender pumps. We have long heard, why is this not happening? And it's a classic case, in my opinion, of passing the buck. The autos say they would build more flex fuel vehicles if there were retailing stations to provide more ethanol blends. And the retailers say we need more autos to justify the investment in installing the hardware. Well, this plan, we're saying the buck stops here. Let's get both to move forward together. And building out that infrastructure is a critical component. We can accomplish it, and we can get to a free market to where we eventually can get with to a position without government assistance. Government support for building out infrastructure in this country has a long and rich tradition that has helped establish this country as the strongest in the world. railroads, canals, locks and dams, airports, highways and bridges, water system, electricity, ports. I could go on and on and on about our government's assistance to building out the infrastructure. Well, we think building out the infrastructure to reduce our dependence on foreign oil is long overdue and will allow consumers to choose their fuel as a great investment for America and American taxpayers. A great amount of the debate over biofuels over the past few years has got down to, and this is whether it's the indirect land use change, caps on certain feedstocks, federal and state regulatory caps and plans, and the recent rulemaking for the RFS2 has even sought to pit biofuels versus biofuels, which doesn't help our nation reduce our dependence on foreign oil. It should be biofuels versus foreign oil so that we can create the fuel here in America with American jobs, improving our environment, improving our national security, and all the other benefits. For these reasons, we are also urging Congress to address the indirect land use change issue. I think Congressman Colin Peterson's language that he put into the House Energy and Climate Bill last year is a perfect way to handle this issue. As many of you know, you've heard us talk about the indirect land use change theory is just that. It's not based on fact. It has no scientific consensus. And rather than regulating an industry before you have the facts, which is kind of getting the cart before the horse, we feel they ought to get the facts first in a National Academy of Sciences study with a review process, as Colin Peterson has suggested, is a great start. We also think the 07 Act needs to be amended to remove the discrimination clause on what type of feedstocks qualify for advanced biofuel. In the case of ethanol, if you didn't have this bizarre indirect land use change theory, we would be above the threshold to qualify for an advanced biofuel, and because we are over 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. If our goal is to clean the environment and reduce our dependence on foreign oil, you can't discriminate against feedstocks. We also want to see dedicated government programs to help assist with loan guarantees to build dedicated ethanol pipelines to the coast. That reduces the cost to the consumer. It reduces the greenhouse gas emissions. It lowers our direct carbon footprint. An alternative minimum fuel tax extension. As you know, that program that helps producers actually utilize some of their processes to lower their carbon footprint, it expired last year. And it's one of the frustrations we all face along with, I'm sure, the biodiesel tax credit community, because Congress has yet to extend the tax provisions that expired in 2009, and we all know we have some key ones about to expire in 2010. And in addition, renewal of the small producer tax credit and an extension of the cellulosic tax credit. In summary, ethanol is the only existing alternative to foreign oil today. It's not decades down the road. It's not that shiny silver ball that may or may not fall out of the sky. It's real. We can do it. We're 10% of the nation's fuel sources, and we can do more, much more. Open up the market. Let us compete. Let American consumers choose. Let American consumers help eliminate foreign oil from the Middle East and elsewhere. Let us transition away from government support. Let's get to 120 million flex fuel vehicles and 200,000 blender pumps nationwide. We often hear the mantra, if Brazil can do it, why can't we? Well, Brazil has a build-out infrastructure. We need to do the same. If we pursue a visionary energy policy for a nation, we can and will reduce our dependence on foreign oil. And biofuels made right here in America with American jobs and American communities will play a big part in all 50 states produced in the future from a variety of feedstock. This is the answer. And at this time, I would like to introduce Jeff Breuing, who is chairman of Growth Energy and CEO of Poet Energy. Jeff has a long experience as an ethanol producer, been in the business well over 20 years before the renewable fuel standard was ever created, which was one of the most visionary public policy provisions that's come down the road in the last 40 years. And he knows that the goals of the open market is rooted in the needs of the history. Jeff?
Thank you, Tom. And thanks to everyone who took the time to be on the call. Poet's been producing ethanol now for more than 2 decades. And for most of that time, we did it without a renewable fuel standard. The reason we were able to succeed and the reason the ethanol industry exists today is largely because of our country's leaders saw the need to lessen our dependence on foreign oil, so they shaped the tax code to achieve that goal. The tax credit allowed us to compete against the heavily entrenched oil industry. Because of that tax credit, thousands of corn farmers were willing to take a risk and invest in ethanol plants. They were soon joined by Main Street investors, and ethanol grew to be the one renewable energy source that is making a significant difference. Today, the U.S. ethanol industry produces more energy for America's motorists than Saudi Arabia. However, I believe the time has come to transition to an open market where consumers can choose their fuel. With a blender pump in every neighborhood and a flex fuel vehicle in every garage, ethanol can compete against oil without the tax incentive. Ethanol is already competitive with gasoline. For most of this year, it has been 50 to 80 cents below the cost of gasoline and is saving money for consumers at the pump. In an open market, consumers would be able to save more money by increasing their use of ethanol, and we believe that they would. As we transition toward an open market, an important exception must be made for cellulosic ethanol. Poet has spent many years and millions of dollars developing cellulosic ethanol, and we have plans to break ground on a commercial-scale plant later this year. Once cellulosic ethanol is available, it will open vast new opportunities to turn cellulose into ethanol in all 50 states. But we're not there yet. Due to the complexity of the process and the infancy of the industry, policymakers need to approve a long-term extension of the cellulosic tax credit. Over time, as the technology matures, is our hope that cellulosic ethanol will be able to compete with gasoline as well. I got into this business because I believe that ethanol is a superior product. It's better for our vehicles, it's better for our rural communities, it's better for our country, and it's better for our environment. The message that I want to make clear today is that if these infrastructure investments are made, the tax credit could fade away. Now I'd like to turn it back to Tom Bias.
Thank you, Jeff. It's my honor and privilege to introduce General Wesley Clark, who is the co-chairman of Growth Energy, to talk about the national security issues and how open markets will increase our demand for domestic ethanol and reduce reliance on imported oil. General Clark.
Well, thanks, Tom. I've joined this team because I believe that America's national security can only be advanced if we can achieve greater energy independence. I've been around a long time. I've seen 30 years of policymakers and legislators touting energy independence. But the fact is, today, we're spending over $300 billion a year importing oil. In June, our balance of payments deficit was $42.4 billion, of which $27.2 billion came from imported oil. The thing about it is, that's not iPods, that's not computers, that's not manufacturing. That's simply a fuel, and we have a domestic substitute fuel. We could keep that $27 billion in the United States. We could recirculate it in our economy. We could use it for education. We can use it for health care. And perhaps most importantly, from a national security standpoint, we can cut off those dollars going to countries that don't support us. It's all about wise policy choices. And I hear this debate starting to rage now about the extension of the tax credit for ethanol. Yes, it's $5 or $6, $7 billion a year. How does that compare to over $300 billion a year that's going out of this country for foreign oil? The thing about the volumetric tax credit is that money's staying in the United States, and today, in fact, it's actually reducing the price of a gallon of gasoline mixed with ethanol. But if we play our cards right, if we have the right policy choices, as we're suggesting today with Growth Energy, we'll take that money, we'll transition it into building out our infrastructure to give Americans the freedom of choice of fuel. If we do that, we're convinced they'll choose a better fuel, and that's domestically produced ethanol, and that'll improve our national security and move us a long way toward energy independence. It's here today. We can do it right now. All we have to do is make the right policy choices. And now I'd like to turn this back to Tom. Tom, thank you.
Thank you, General Clark. At this time, I'd like to turn to former Congressman Jim Nussel, who's a special advisor and Growth Energy Board meeting member, to address the appeal of the open market plan for members of Congress and the budget issues and how we get to a free market over time.
Well, thank you, Tom, and I guess it's the season for another energy bill. I mean, it seems like every election we come up with, it's time for another national energy strategy, and this year probably is not much different. I mean, here we go again. I think more than ever, this country is in need of a creative, effective energy strategy to meet the crucial challenges that our country faces. I mean, we've heard about it on this call. We're going to continue to hear about it throughout the summer as this debate rages, but our addiction to foreign oil, creating U.S. jobs, growing the economy, and defending our American security. I mean, that's what this is about, and every time we come down to this time of year, it seems like policymakers know inherently what needs to be done. They just need the creative policy options to accomplish it. Well, that's what this is about. What we're proposing today is to try something just a little bit different. Yes, we support VTEC. We always have. We always will continue to support that kind of commitment on the part of American taxpayers to renewable energy. But we also know that if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got. And we don't want to just continue getting what we've always gotten. We want a creative policy that over time recognizes that if we shift the emphasis from VTEC to building out infrastructure as quickly as possible, we will reap benefits that, well, just look at what's happened in Brazil as an example. Now, we're not Brazil, but it gives you an idea of the flavor of the energy strategy that they put forth, the leadership that they put in with flex fuel vehicles, with infrastructure build-out, the commitment that their policymakers have made, and the results that they have in their economy. So our goal here is to be creative and to help us reduce our foreign oil dependency, create jobs, and make America more safe. The plan that we're rolling out today recognizes that Americans really have no choice in their fuel. I mean, think about it. You know, there's a lot of different signs when you pull up to a gas station. You'll see different owners who owns the signs. But underneath the signs, they're selling the same thing. I mean, they're selling gasoline, which is refined from oil, two-thirds of which is coming from outside the United States. So the choice, in our opinion, shouldn't be just what kind of brand of fuel you buy. It should be what kind of fuel. And what we're saying is that if Americans are presented with an opportunity to choose their fuel, to have freedom of fuel, if you will, that they will choose homegrown ethanol, something that creates jobs here and makes us more safe. It would redirect, the policy that we're talking about would redirect the funds currently going to the oil industry toward domestic ethanol producers and build out the distribution of infrastructure for ethanol. That's what this is really about. And it also allows us to install over 200,000 blender pumps. It allows us to go and change this to include pipeline distribution. so that we can continue that. These are all positives that we think will help us as we're looking for other sources, and would also, we think, move us toward more flex fuel vehicles and the goal of 120 million. So we have an opportunity today, as someone who has been a ball carrier for ethanol in the Congress for 16 years, I got to tell you, the policymakers are begging us for creativity right now. They know that if we always continue to ask for the same thing, we're going to get it maybe, but we're going to get it for a shorter period, and we're going to get it with a little bit lopped off the top, a haircut, as we have in the past. Instead, let's take and make this commitment to renewable energy, to ethanol, to a domestic energy source, and let's make that commitment long-term. That's what we're asking for, and we believe that if we can accomplish that, ethanol will, in a fair and open market, will be the successful choice and will be the consumer's choice. So let me turn it back to Tom, but I think this is a creative opportunity for policymakers, if they're looking for one. If this is a typical debate, you know, yeah, typical things are going to happen. We understand that. But if they truly want to have a debate about our energy security and they truly want to be creative about our energy future and not just kick the can again and do one more energy strategy the way they almost always do in an election year, then I think this presents an opportunity for creative policy thinking that policymakers are definitely looking for. Tom?
Thank you, Congressman. At this point, we would take questions from accredited press.
Okay, for our first question is from Mario Parker with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for holding the call. I appreciate it. This question is for Tom. I'm guessing, I just want to know, what's the next step here? Is the next step to try to tack this on to the next energy bill?
Yes, Mario. If the Senate moves forward with an energy bill, our goal would to be to attach it to whatever companion energy tax legislation could be moving.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if they don't move an energy bill this year, we're not sure what vehicles are going to move. You know, they still have the struggle with the 09 tax extenders. The VTEC certainly expires at the end of this year. We don't know what they're going to do or when they're going to do it, whether it happens before the election or afterwards. But our goal would be to move it as soon as possible. We think it's going to take a few years to build out the infrastructure. And if you delay this decision down the road, if you kick the can down the road again, as Congressman Nussel articulated, then all we do is delay the time that we have access to a free, open, competitive marketplace and can get by without government assistance.
Okay. And one quick follow-up. The usual representatives that you all work with, Grassley and such, the ones that you, the individuals that you mentioned earlier in the call, are they on board with this as well, the strategy?
Well, we're just throwing the idea and the concept out there, and we're going to be meeting over the next several days with as many policymakers that are involved in this decision-making and continue to push forward. You know, of the people that we've talked to within our industry and the policymaking circles, I think everyone wants to get to that point that we're advocating, building out the infrastructure. There may be differences of opinion. There always are. It's a democracy on how we get there. But we want to keep this out there, get it addressed. We're willing to consider a lot of different options, and I hope people are open to moving this forward.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
And for our next question is from Stephen Cook with Daily Environmental Report. Please go ahead.
Department of Energy is researching drop-in replacement biofuels, drop-in replacements for oil-based fuels, and if that avenue was pursued, would there be even a need for new infrastructure for ethanol?
Well, you know, I think as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of ideas about the future. We're current. We're today. We have an economic crisis. We're spending $300 billion a day out of this country's resources to fund other countries' economies because of our addiction to oil. if people want to continue to kick the can down the road, we'll be the same place we were 40 years ago when this energy crisis began with the first OPEC oil embargo. We have these wake-up calls time and time again. We think the infrastructure it could be built out cheaper under what we're outlining than any other alternative fuel, and quicker, and move forward today. You know, we hear, and you know, one of the repeating themes you hear in this debate is, oh, we got to find this magic new energy source, and it's coming, it's coming. Look at today. 2 years ago, we had all-time record gas prices, $4.50 a gallon or so. It was devastating to our nation's motorists. You go back a few years, every few years we have an economic shock from this. Why wait?
And for our next question is from Martin Ross with Illinois Farm Week. Please go ahead.
Basically, two things. From a practical standpoint on the Hill, I was talking the other day to one of the new corn growers, National Corn Growers officers, and they're going to be pushing for a 5-year extension of VTEC. In practical terms, as you guys push proactively for the ethanol infrastructure funding and incentives, where will you be, I mean, how will you be engaging in the specific question of a long-term VTEC extension beyond a cellulosic carve-out? And also, where is some of the pipeline, ethanol pipeline research at right now in terms of the feasibilities?
All right. Well, first of all, your first question. I think what we're saying here today is we want an extension of the amount of money that's going on the tax credits. We think that some of those funds need to be redirected to build out the infrastructure. You know, one of the things you have to look is down the road, not at the end of your nose. And we think down the road, the biggest challenge we have is not producing ethanol, it's still access to the marketplace. So we want to redirect some of those funds, not wait 3 years or 2 years or 5 years before getting started, because it won't happen overnight, Martin. We want to move it today. As far as the pipeline issue, I would have to get back to you on that. I'm not the expert on it, and unless Jeff or someone wants to make a comment.
Yeah, sure. I could comment on that. You know, we've been working on the pipeline research for quite some time. You know, that basically it looks very positive. Things are going very well. We're currently working with the DOE on a loan guarantee process, and you know, a loan guarantee is going to be critical for this this pipeline. But it looks to be very feasible at this time.
Thanks, guys.
Martin, just as a follow up, it's my understanding that we're still waiting for DOE to release the pipeline study. It's taking a little longer than what a lot of people expected.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
And our next question is from Peter Cohen with National Journal. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for doing the call. My question is, would this essentially be a 5-year plan similar to just simply shifting the dollar value of a 5-year VTEC extension over to building out this infrastructure? Is that essentially how it would work? What's the timing of this plan?
Well, our preference would be 5 years. But that may be a function of what Congress decides to do. But we'll certainly push for doing it over a 5-year period. Again, Peter, you just don't build that infrastructure overnight.
Okay, so just a quick follow-up then. So essentially, I mean, you would be supportive of extending the VTEC before it expires at the end of this year. For however much time you can get, but I mean, let's say they only extend it for 1 year, for example. That's clearly not enough time to do some of these things.
No, and you know, that's a challenge that everyone faces, is having some certainty. And one-year plans or two-year plans do not provide the certainty that industries or businesses need. I mean, whether it's wind or solar or ethanol or whatever, a one-year plan or generally tax programs, that's not a good way to go. We would certainly advocate an extension for multiple years, and we want to shift a lot of that money into the infrastructure build-out, so at the end of that period, we can go. We can have access to a free market, consumers have access to fuel choice, and we can say that we no longer need government assistance. So I guess we're saying, if you do this right and you provide the certainty, we've got a plan on how we can go away from the government program.
So this is simply, you're simply providing some guideposts for Congress now and allowing them to determine whether or not to implement it and for how long. You're simply saying the credit value of the credit should be shifted over to this underwriting program.
Yeah, some of the value of the credit.
Some of the value. Okay, where would the rest of it still be structured as it is today, other than the cellulosic?
There's all kinds of options out there, and I think that's why it's important for Congress to have the energy debate. And I hope they live up to the recent announcements that I've been reading in the press that they're going to move to an energy bill and an energy bill debate and discussion, and we think that would be healthy, and we can sort all these things out. But what we want to throw out here is let's not wait again. Let's move forward on the infrastructure, Peter. And we're certainly willing to listen to all kinds of options.
And, Tom, if I can just join in on that answer, I'd just like to say that what we're trying to do, Peter, is we're trying to get the Congress to look at this in a little bit different light. This is not a subsidy for an industry or a group of people. This is a way of changing America's fuel consumption, reducing the import bill that's really dragging down our economy, and moving us toward energy independence. So as tight as PAYGO is and as difficult as it is to work with, we hope that providing an alternative like this will help the Congress see that there's a big picture here that's a lot broader and needs to be considered a little bit differently than just as a normal tax extender item. This is a way of really measurably moving us toward energy independence and reducing that bill for imported oil.
Thank you.
What do we got time for, Chris?
One more question.
Okay. One more.
Our next question is from Mary Claire Jelonek with the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, this is Mary Claire with AB. I just to follow up on that question, so you guys would phase out all of the government tax benefits in 5 years? That's your ideal plan?
If you build out the infrastructure.
Right, okay. And
fuel vehicles and blender pumps, so we have access to an open market. We will be able to compete.
Right, and there would be no more tax benefits in 5 years. That's your ideal plan.
If the infrastructure is built out.
Okay, and my second question on that is, I mean, obviously you guys wouldn't announce this if you didn't have some support on Capitol Hill for this, and I guess I'm just interested in how that plays out on the Hill, since you all are only part of the industry, and, you know, you're not doing this call with RFA, or, you know, there's other industry groups who I guess we haven't heard from on this yet, but I'm assuming that they're not with you on this plan. So if the entire industry isn't together pushing this, then how do you all deal with that rift, and how do you all push this, you know, how do you all get this done?
Well, I think, Mary Claire, we all have to lay out for the policymakers the options. And we want the debate to begin. And what we've tried to take here is a visionary approach in how we address the big concerns and the big challenges facing our industry. And we'll work with anyone on Capitol Hill or off in order to help achieve this.
Yeah, if I could just add, Tom, this is Jim Nussel. If this is a typical energy debate, then industry groups will likely operate from fear, and they will rush in and they will say, don't do anything to us other than keep us where we are, please. And they'll come in and they'll beg for 1 year or a couple of years of certainty while they wait for the politicians to either figure out what happens in an election or to get more certainty politically. So if that's the typical debate, there will be a kind of a fear factor that comes in. If it isn't typical, meaning if it's dynamic, if it's creative, if policymakers are looking for ways to actually solve problems, to actually build out infrastructure, to actually reduce our dependence on foreign oil, to actually boost renewable, you know, energy and create jobs here at home, if that's really what they're trying to do, we just want to make sure that they see some options from ethanol where in the past, I can tell you as a policymaker, we really haven't seen a lot of those creative options. So I think this is an opportunity for us to push a positive debate, but you're right. I mean, if it's a typical energy debate year, I think the suspicion of your question is correct. Everyone will kind of hunker down in the bunker and they'll say, please don't do anything to us, just extend us, and, you know, we'll kick the can down the road. So I think it just, we want to be prepared and we want ethanol to be prepared for a creative, dynamic debate in case, politically and from a policy standpoint, that's actually what happens. But it may not. We recognize that.
Okay, thanks. Just one last thing. Have you guys reached out to those other groups and tried to get them on board with this?
We've been sharing this idea and concept with industry, with farm groups, with policymakers. It's going to kickstart really fast, but we wanted to get out there in the debate. And you know, I don't think there's anyone in the industry that doesn't want to see us move towards building out the infrastructure. There may be differences of opinion on how we get there, but that's what the democratic process is all about. And let's start the debate. I wish the Senate had started this debate a year ago. You know, again, 2008, we had record gas prices. And what have they done about it since then? And a lot of discussion goes on Capitol Hill. What's time for action? And we hope they act within the next couple weeks before they go home. Again,
okay, I'm sorry. Can I ask one quick follow-up? I've talked to you about the increasing skepticism against ethanol. I mean, is part of this, I mean, I think this is what you're saying, but is part of this just trying to have a new agenda as this tax credit, as time goes forward this year, and it seems less and less likely the tax credit was actually going to get extended? I mean, are you all doing this sort of as a proactive move if just in case the tax credit expires completely?
No, I think we're doing it as a proactive move to do what's right for the nation and reducing our dependence on foreign oil and our industry. And, you know, what we're saying here, Mary Claire, we can compete. We can compete if we have access to the marketplace. Take off the chains, take off the barriers, let us move forward. Thank you all, and I know there's probably a lot more questions out there. Chris Thorne, if you'll get your questions to Chris, we'll try to respond in a timely manner to each and every one of them. And just let me repeat again, what we're suggesting is take the tax credits that are available that we hope get extended for a very long, or, you know, for a multi-year process, 5 years, and shift some of these funds into building out the infrastructure so we can compete in the marketplace. Thank you all very much.